Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of True Story on the Authors on the Air Network. I'm your host, Brian Freeman, and I'm the author of 14 best-selling psychological thrillers. What we do on this show is help you discover nonfiction storytellers who deliver all the drama, suspense, and emotion that you'd expect to find in a great thriller. But of course, every story they tell is absolutely true. Well, if you ever thought about running away as a kid and heading off on a grand adventure to some exotic part of the world, today's episode of True Story is for you. My guest is Lori Gwen Shapiro, and she is the author of the rollicking new book, The Stowaway, which tells the story of a New York teenager determined to make his way onto Commander Richard Byrd's expedition to Antarctica in 1928. And the lengths that Billy goes to and how it all works out will confirm what we've all suspected, that truth is usually stranger than fiction. Lori, thanks for joining me today. Lori, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me on the show. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, you know, here we are in 2018, and we've got satellites capturing pretty much every square foot of the planet. It's hard to believe that, you know, that only 90 years ago, Antarctica was pretty much as foreign and unknown to people on Earth as the moon was.
It's true. I think that that's one of the joys of writing this book, is going back in time to when a 17-year-old boy would want nothing else than to stow away to Antarctica. And in 1928, Commander Richard Byrd was one of the two most famous men in America, the other one being of Lindbergh, who he had just lost the race across Atlantic to, and he wanted to cement his place in history. He had helped to go to the North Pole, you know, as a he wasn't the pilot of a plane, but it was his expedition, but that hadn't been actually sealing his fate, because some people started to doubt that he actually flew over. Then he lost to Charles Lindbergh, and then he decided, I'm gonna have a legacy, and I'll be the first to fly over the South Pole. And in 1928, 70,000 people wanted to volunteer for about 60 to 70 spots. And how is a 17-year-old boy supposed to get on that trip? And he had this thirst for going, and that's where we start the story of the stowaway.
It just seems like this expedition absolutely electrified the country. I mean, everyone wanted to go. Millionaires, Boy Scouts, it seemed to be kind of taking over the country.
Well, I think one of the things that was amazing about it is that there's flight involved. This was America's first expedition to Antarctica. When we think about Antarctica, we often think of names like Shackleton and Scott and Armistead, and that's really from a different era. That's from around 1911, the heroic age of exploration. And Byrd really tapped into that for Americans who didn't have Antarctica on their brain really before 1928. But what he was doing was taking the ships that, you know, the other explorers had, even the dogs, which really was exciting to people, every 100 dogs going to Antarctica from America. But he was taking three airplanes. And imagine what it would have been like to be the first to fly over the continent. Think about what it was like when we first flew over America and you see the Grand Canyon and various things that we didn't know. And a lot of people were speculating what might be seen. For example, dinosaurs or lost indigenous people. I mean, this was the era when the Komodo dragon was going into public consciousness. And they didn't know what was going to be found. And that was what was also fueling the excitement, that there's airplanes and you can see from far away that were going. And it was really just a feeding frenzy. The New York Times had the official coverage, and they covered it every single day for almost a year before it happened. And it just was the thing. And also, the other thing that was involved was this was a new era with radio. so Bird, you could hear Bird talking about this, and radio was coming from Antarctica as well and on the ships, and people were very connected the way you might be connected now, and that was not something that had happened back in the heroic age. In, you know, only, you know, a short while back around 1928 was the modern era, and that also fueled the excitement, radio.
So it seems like it was kind of a combination of technology making some advances and yet still this lack of knowledge about one of these remote places in the world.
Well, it was really akin to man walking on the moon. We really did
right.
not know. I mean, Antarctica still, for many of us, is a mystery. And there's so many things that we're finding out now. Imagine what it was like in 1928. But imagine knowing that your countrymen were going to fly over the continent. And this really fueled a lot of interest. But in addition to this, Richard Byrd, who was back then Commander Richard Byrd, and most people who, if they know him now as Admiral Richard Byrd, which happened during this
mm-hmm.
expedition. But what was amazing about it was that he was also a master self-promoter. This was not funded by the American government. This was an expedition. Every little bit of this expedition was raised from private sponsorship. And so anything that might get him some press was put out there. In fact, he chose things just to excite people. The captain of the flagship, which was renamed the City of New York to appeal to New Yorkers where the ship was leaving from, the captain was chosen. His name was Captain Melville. That was not an accident. He was the second cousin of Herman Melville, and that caused excitement. Captain Melville is leading Americans to Antarctica. So just every little bit of this was fueling the excitement that was going on. And this was also right, obviously, before the Great Depression, and New York was roaring in money. You know, it was the jazz age. We were rolling in money. America was doing well, and this was a prideful act that we were bringing the American flag, and they were going to build a small village on ice and put the American flag on ice. Imagine what that would have been like if you were a young boy in New York City who, like Billy Goronsky, who was a kid, a first-generation Polish Catholic kid living in the Lower East Side and then Queens, New York, when he was about 15 and moved to Queens. And
so
appealed to him, as all Americans were excited.
So introduce us to Billy and tell us about this teenager. I mean, I just love the nature of his obsession with this expedition. And I mean, in the midst of thousands and thousands of people that are trying to get on board, I mean, he's clearly got no hope of being part of this.
Zero hope.
Determined.
And on top of that, you have to be 18 to apply, and his dad thinks he's out of his mind. He says, "Stop bothering me with this application." So not that he would have gotten in even if he applied, you know, he had no skills. But
right.
I think what's lovely about him is that he was a reader. So he is a truant that comes out of reading books. People don't tell you how dangerous books are. And the librarians would pull the true adventure stories for him. And that was what he loved. And his father had been an immigrant to Ellis Island and came with no money and made a little bit of a business for himself. He was had an upholstery business. And Billy wanted to lead a life of true adventure. He did not want to suffer as the son, the heir to the upholstery business that his dad had created. And so he studied this expedition the way that a beat reporter might study it. He knew as much as anyone else. And one of the things he read was that 2 weeks before the flagship was going to Antarctica, they were going to let people on board for a dollar. That was partly, again, to raise money for this sponsored expedition that Americans were all trying to help pay for. And that was really his opportunity to look on board. And he had this cockamamie plan that he was going to stow away. And he actually, at that moment, picked a hiding spot. 2 weeks when everybody's touring and gawking, he's trying to figure out where can I hide, and that was really interesting. But he isn't a terrible kid, even though he's splashed on the page the front pages of the newspaper when he was caught, as you know, stowaway caught. I mean, he didn't actually get to go on his first attempt, and that's part of what I love about him. And I don't know if you want to ask more about that, but I mean, he didn't just stow away once.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, and I love the opening pages of your book. You've got Billy standing on the edge of the Hudson River, and then later you have this lyrical description of him in the water. You know, tell us about that first attempt in terms of what happened to Billy that night.
I think this was what got me to want to write the book. I was researching something else and I came upon the mention of this stowaway who had jumped in the Hudson River and swam. I was like, what? And I just stopped what I was doing. And he was a fantastic swimmer. One of the reasons he was such a great swimmer is that he was a Polish Catholic kid. And in the 1920s, many Polish Catholics across the country were members of this group called the Polish Falcons, which actually is an organization that still exists. But they believe that if they kept the Polish ethnic people healthy, that if Poland became a country again, that they would be in service. And of course, by 1928, Poland had become a country, but he had been swimming with his father, not only in swimming pools, but in places like the East River, and the Hudson River, and out by Coney Island. He was a very strong swimmer at 17, partly because of his heritage. And it was just an amazing thing that, to me, that he swam to shore, that he got on a boat. When you read about it, there were quite a few books written about the expedition from the 1930s. That was really when people were interested in this. It was sort of, it's been lost to time. But one thing that was fascinating was that Byrd had complete control over those narratives. So nobody was ever going to say anything bad about Byrd, and Byrd is the star of all those stories. And the stowaway was actually where he got popular, was in the newspapers. The beat reporters loved him. There was a stowaway, and when he got there, you would think, okay, that's crazy enough. But it's almost like the beginning of a joke. There's a Polish Catholic stowaway.
He's not alone.
He settles in his underwear. He's waiting, and then he hears another boy speak to him. And this is a kid named Jack Solowitz, who's a Jewish stowaway. And then they start arguing over who has the right to be the stowaway. And a third boy pipes up, and he's an African American stowaway who wants to be the first black man to the Antarctica. I just thought, this is crazy. This can't be true. And that's when I started my own dive into research, and everything really panned out. And I started to try to find some kind of descendant, for one of these stowaways, in addition to the old reports. And that's where my story started to rack and focus, because I did have a lot of luck there. That's part of my own true story. Just separate than theirs, is that I actually made an absolutely crazy chart of every Goranski up and down the Eastern Seaboard, and I would call up, and you try calling people out of the blue and saying, hi, did you possibly descend from a kid who jumped into the Hudson River and tried to stow away to Antarctica in 1928 with Commander Richard Byrd? It was click, click, click. I was laughing. I was calling. And I'm telling you what happened, and this is true. On the 19th call, I know it was number 19 because I did a big circle on my chart, I called Goranski that was in Cape Elizabeth, Maine. And I thought, well, maybe he's near the ocean. He would like the water, right? He was a stowaway. And a woman answered. I knew that Billy had been born in New York in 1910. So he was American, even though he was first generation. And this woman had a very heavy ethnic accent. I assume she was Polish. I thought, well, this isn't any descendant. But I went through my spiel. My crazy, did you jump in, do you know anyone that jumped in the Hudson River in your ancestry? And then I heard, that was my husband. And
I was
like, what is this, the Titanic now? You know, like the old lady survived. And I had a chill. And I started talking to her, and she said, she was an old woman. She was his second wife. He had had a bad first marriage. He married someone about 20 years younger. He would be about 116, 117 now. So he's not alive. I don't think that's much of a spoiler. but she's alive, and she said, I have everything. I was hoping one day somebody would call. And she had his scrapbooks when he was studying Commander Byrd. And then his parents were horrified that he was this truant that everyone in New York knew about, but eventually he became a folk figure in New York, and they kept a scrapbook. I had his photographs, and she had slept next to him for so many years, and all of a sudden, a real story rather than a caricature could come back into focus.
Right, right. You're listening to True Story. This show is a copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I'm Brian Freeman, and my latest thriller is The Voice Inside. I'm talking with Lori Gwen Shapiro about her new book, The Stowaway, which is available right now from Simon & Schuster. Now, Lori, this book takes us from New York to Tahiti to New Zealand and finally down to Antarctica itself. As a Minnesotan, I always appreciate authors who know how to write about winter. And I made a note along the way about how well you describe the beauty and the fearsomeness of Antarctica. In fact, I highlighted the line, teeth clacked in one of the windiest, coldest places on Earth. Well, that was a terrific phrase. Now, you went down to Antarctica yourself as part of your research, didn't you? What was
that
like?
That's true. I felt that if I'm going to actually write the story, I need to have the authority to write it. And I'm actually from the neighborhood that Billy Goranski grew up. I'm a lifelong Lower East Sider of downtown New York. And I'm honestly telling you, I didn't know a lot about Antarctica before I started researching this. And I read books and I read articles, but I had the real sense that unless I actually went to where he had gone, I wasn't going to be able to pull this off. So at the end of my research, I took a good chunk of my advance, much to the chagrin of my husband, by the way. And I said, I'm going to Antarctica. And I was on a very pricey
trip. I would have
loved
to hear that conversation.
Yes, that's an adventure. But I, you know, this was a four-week expedition. This was not leaving from, a lot of Americans go from Argentina and they go to the peninsula and they go back. That was not this trip. The explorers left from the bottom of New Zealand. And they would go to the Ross Sea, where the Ross, at that time it was called the Ross Ice Barrier, and now it's called the Ross Ice Shelf. And that, on that big mile-high block of ice that goes on forever, that is where Little America was built, which is the true town that existed in 1928 on the ice. And I knew I wanted to go from the bottom of New Zealand and get to the Ross Sea. And that is a trip that is not offered very often, and it was very expensive. And I finally got a triple by the engine room, but man, I was on that boat. Even if I was the last, I was the least expensive ticket on there, I got on there. And what this afforded me was the opportunity to start to experience what my protagonist had actually experienced. I mean,
right.
Antarctica hasn't really changed that much, especially that area. There are no villages. There's
right.
stations, but you know those are McMurdo, for example. What?
No dinosaurs.
But you know what? I experienced the waves, the catabatic winds are the windiest winds on Earth. The waves are crazy. I found out, much to my delight, that I actually have sea legs. A lot of people were down for the count. There were a lot of men that were vomiting off the side as the waves, and I just started hanging out. I hang on to the rails, and I loved it. I couldn't believe I could do this. And then you start to experience things that someone might have experienced in 1928. You see there's penguins that live in certain areas. So the first penguins we saw were the Adélie penguins, which are these adorable little penguins. But then as you get into the colder regions, you start to see the emperor penguins. But the thing that going to the site affords you is details that you cannot think of when you're reading articles. For example, the light, the cold. I mean, I would have just written, you know, and it was very white. But that's not the case because I was there in February, which is the Antarctic summer, and there were long days, but there was a sunset, and the light and the colors are something I could not have figured out. And the smell, I mean, what kind of smell could there be in Antarctica? But the smell of penguin dung or guano was just intense when we landed on the sites that these men would have landed on themselves. And then you would see the whales. And here I am, this, you know, woman who normally drinks a coffee downtown, and I'm like watching the same whales that they would have seen, all sorts of whales. And I really started to feel like I had the excitement that he had. And I hope for readers that I brought some of that excitement. I didn't make myself a real character in this book because there's enough going on. You know, you don't need to put me in there, but I hope that that excitement and that expertise comes across in the narrative.
Yeah.
And that it was worth that trip.
There's just no substitute for actually being able to experience that yourself and therefore be able to put yourself in the shoes of your characters.
And yes, and the other thing is that I am genuinely excited about this book and having written it, and I feel very proud of it. And part of it is because I put myself in that position of going. I think that added to the incentive to finish the book and to you know, here's something that's interesting. When I started this book, I'm also a filmmaker. I tried to bring some of filmmaking techniques. I used to, when I was much younger, had written a couple of wacky novels, and I wanted to write something with more gravitas now that I'm a little bit older, and I thought this was what I want to do, a nonfiction true story, like a documentary and a book. So I have those two techniques, you know, in my background. I started out writing this book for me, I'm going to be honest with you, but when I had this opportunity to talk to his widow, and I realized that nobody was writing about this man. It's not like I had any competition. People aren't even writing about Admiral Byrd anymore. No one writes about Admiral Byrd, who was once the most famous man in America, who had 3 ticker tape parades, and no one else has ever had 3 ticker tape parades. But no, you know, people think Admiral Byrd. What did he do again? You know, forgotten. And when
it's amazing
yeah.
It kind of fades into the mists of time. I mean, things that are just extraordinarily famous in their moment, and you know, just a few years later, it starts to kind of fade away from consciousness.
Yes, but we have to also remember that this expedition lasts from 1928 to 1930, and something pretty big in American history happens
right.
in 1929. And
exactly.
The shift of people's attention goes from the ticker tape parades and all the honor to where am I get some food on my table after the stock market crash. But the thing I was going to say is that I felt a shift on why I was writing. What was making me want to write it? Originally, it was because I wanted to write something with more gravitas. But then I felt that if I didn't write it, nobody else would. His wife would die. Nobody's going to go to Antarctica. Nobody cares about the stowaway. There's a little slice of American history that is forgotten. And I felt a serious obligation to write it because if I didn't write it, who the heck was going to write this? And,
right,
you know,
right.
This is not the story of Alexander Hamilton, but this is the story of America in a very curious moment of time, right at the end of the 20s and right when the Depression is starting. And we're also people don't remember that we had this moment in time where we had our own explorer and that excitement that we are going to be part of Antarctica, not just the British, not just the Norwegians, not just the Belgians. This was now not just European history. This was American history. And I thought, wow, am I really the only one that can tell this story? And I thought to myself, I actually am.
Right, right.
No one else is caring at this particular moment in time. And I hope that other people care now that I've written it.
Well, it's a terrific book. I'm sure listeners won't be surprised to learn that in the end, Billy, you know, becomes a part of the expedition. I won't spoil the fun by talking about all the things he has to do to get there. But, you know, obviously Commander Byrd became famous as a part of this. But how famous did Billy himself become as a result of this expedition?
Well, quite frankly, I thought, well, maybe he was just a novelty, and he was, but he became very, very famous, almost the way an Instagram star becomes very famous. I mean, he was known.
Sure.
I found coverage of him across the world, and the expedition started to use him. Actually, Byrd's brother was governor of Virginia, and he was the one that told him, hey, there's real promotional value in that stowaway kid. And they put the publicists on it. And by the time he went through the Panama Canal to Tahiti. Imagine being a teenage boy swimming with the women of Tahiti after he had been an art student in high school studying Gauguin, and then he goes down to New Zealand. When he gets to New Zealand, he's a household name. He can't believe it, but they've been promoting him in the New Zealand papers as well. He was covered in Poland because of his heritage. I found articles in England. But what Byrd realizes that is he's very good for getting press. But in the end, Byrd's most important person was always going to be about himself. So he never really promoted himself. He was always listening for clues. And when his time was over, in terms of being needed for the expedition's publicity, he was very loyal. Everyone pledged a loyalty to Byrd. And his life started to change. But he did use a lot of the skills. I mean, without telling the whole story, he did not go into a life of upholstery. And those skills that he learned at sea, he did. We will say that his life was at sea, and he did become a true adventure story in a way. And he did lead the kind of exciting life that he had dreamed about as a young boy in the library.
If people want to learn more about you and your book, where can they go?
Well, I do have a website, LauriGwenShapiro.com, and it's Lori like Lori Anderson, LauriE, Gwen like Gwen Stefani, Shapiro, Shapiro. And there's a bio, but there's also I've been doing I'm actually normally in New York, but I'm actually in Los Angeles as I'm talking to you. I'm on a bit of a book tour, and there's a bunch of events coming up that could be there. And I love to correspond with people, so if anybody wants, there's an email to reach out to me. And I would love to. I'm also on Goodreads if you want to be my friend, and I'm happy to correspond that way as well.
The book is The Stowaway by Lori Gwen Shapiro. It's available now from Simon & Schuster. It is the perfect book, I will tell you, to take on a beach vacation because it will have you shivering with the Antarctic cold. Lori, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. And I also just wanted to say that there's also photos for people in the book, which is something that was a real treat to be able to include on a true history book.
Perfect. Well, I just thoroughly enjoyed the book, and I think all of the readers will too.
Thank you so much for inviting me on the show. What a treat.
Absolutely. This is Brian Freeman. You've been listening to True Story on the Authors on the Air Network. For information on upcoming episodes of the show, be sure to go out and like my Facebook page at facebook.com/truestoryradio. And you can visit authorsontheair.com for more interviews with best-selling writers in every genre. That's authorsontheair.com. I'm Brian Freeman. You can find out more about me and my thrillers at my website, which is bfreemanbooks.com. That's bfreemanbooks.com. Thanks for listening. Enjoy The Stowaway and happy reading.